Just the defeat at Doncaster this week. Graham Hacking thinks that's the end of Crewe's promotion chase this year. With these kind of performances, he sees a 10th or 11th placed finish. Chris Mason sort of sighed the void of ideas. Graham Miles says he thought Crewe were very poor, but it's one of the worst refereeing performances he's ever seen. He does add it was good to see Tabs back. Darren Stevens thought the second half was better than the first anemic half, but it reminded him of the Walsall and Grimsby matches of December. Pete thought we made a 19th place side look good. That was well below par with a great away following. George Edge Robinson says it was inevitable once Doncaster got one, they'd get another. Poor performance. Trevor Griffiths says there was too much wrong today, but we're really missing Offord. Something Joe agrees with, adding we were flat and tepid. Still, 7 points off 8th place and 3 off the top 3. Neil Hulse hopes that Offord beating the ground and looking at Lee Bell isn't going to be the defining point of our season. John Bates says Bell needs to work out how to control the middle of the park without Offord, as we were sloppy on a decent surface. Andy Griffiths says Rowe is not a 10. Tracy is hit and miss and Cooney gets beaten too often. Doncaster defended well and could have scored more. Joe says Cooney isn't a right back and Rowe is not a 10. We should be setting much higher standards. Rory saw zero creativity in the midfield that was too easy to run through and in front of a disorganised defence. Dan Colclough wants a management reset. Pick an 11 that includes Tabernan and Holychek and stick with it. Autos are still on. Bringing on back the good times thinks the playoffs are still on, but it will be tricky. That game was dreadful. Tim Green says there's a lot of harsh rhetoric on what is still a young management team. They're going to make mistakes, but overall, they've got most things right. We go again on Tuesday. Hello, welcome back to the latest episode of the Railway Men podcast. To help us go through the defeat at Doncaster, our panel today is Tim Robinson. Hello, Tim.
Hi, Stu. Hi, guys.
Mark Birtles. Hello, Mark.
Hi, everybody.
And Alex Arani. Hello, Alex.
Hello, Stu. Good to be back on safe ground after my foray into writing last week, I must say.
I thought it was very good, Alex. I know you're much happier talking than you are writing, but I enjoyed it. It does help when you can read something in someone's voice as well. I always do think that that helps. And it was very clearly written by Alex Arani last week's match review. Mark, can I start with you? There was a few changes to the starting 11 from the Morecambe defeat. Booth in goal for Davis, Cooney in at right back, and Aaron Rowe starting in place of Holychek. What did you think of that before the game started?
Right, I've made a conscious decision this morning to come on and not be super negative because I don't think it serves any purpose. And I'm going to try and remain upbeat. But I also know that you can't fool football fans and you can't bullshit people because they see straight through it. I wouldn't have made those changes if I was the Crewe Alex manager yesterday. I don't think that the performance the week before, albeit a defeat, warranted three changes. And certainly the three that he made, I thought Billington was fine the week before. Holychek was fine, although I've found out since that he was poorly in the week. That's why he didn't play. And the goalkeeper was a big call because, as ever, if you drop one goalkeeper, and I believe we're down to two now, we haven't got the three. If you drop the goalkeeper and he doesn't do very well, then what do you do next? And I'm sure we'll come on to an instance where he perhaps didn't do very well yesterday.
Yeah, we will come on to that. But Tim, you know, I think it's probably worthwhile pulling you in at this point. Last week, you said, keep the keeper, keep Davis in goal, because if we change goalkeepers and it doesn't work, what do we do next? So I'm assuming you were not a fan of these changes on Saturday.
I think it's easy with the benefit of hindsight to say that none of the changes worked. I think before the game, when I saw the lineup, I could justify why he'd done each one of the changes. Though Davis didn't have a very good game last week. And Booth had done nothing wrong previously before he punctured his lung and was out. So I can see why he made that change. You're right. I probably wouldn't have done it. I think I'd have stuck with Davis. But it is what it is. And then yeah, the other two changes. I think you know we've had a pretty much an unchanged lineup for several weeks now, and maybe he thought that the second half against Morecambe last weekend was a sign that a couple needed a rest, and maybe Cooney and Rowe deserved their opportunity. But I think now, looking back at it in the cold light of day, I don't think any of the changes worked.
Whether he deserved it or not is one argument, Tim, but Aaron Rowe is not a number 10, and neither is Shiloh Tracy, and I'm a little bit sick and tired of seeing us try and persevere with both of them in that role because they can't play it. And again, yesterday, Aaron Rowe can't play in that position.
Yeah, but if as you said, if Holacek's ill and Tabben is not quite ready to start yet, then who are you left with in that advanced midfield role?
I'd put Charlie Kirk in there before I put Shiloh Tracy or Aaron Rowe in there.
Yeah, that was suggested to me last night by Mr. Trevor Griffiths. He could play there, and I think he probably could. You're looking at someone that can do it better than Aaron Rowe.
Shiloh and Rowe are wingers, as far as I'm concerned, who could do a job at wing-back, as an advanced wing-back. But they need to hug the byline, whether it's the left-hand side or the right-hand side, get chalk on their boots and either drive to the byline or drive towards the goal. Let's keep it simple. We don't need to reinvent the wheel here. So in terms of the changes, I would have brought Booth back in. He was in possession of the shirt until he got injured. And I, bizarrely, if Booth was playing last week, I think we'd have won. And maybe if Davies was playing this week, that first goal doesn't go in. But I still think Booth is in possession. He only lost it due to injury. And then Davies came in and did quite well. But he only did well because he had nothing to do. As soon as he had something to do, he couldn't do it. So I was fine with bringing Booth back in. I didn't get the Cooney one. I think Billington's been steady Eddie. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And then if Holacek was poorly during the week and he wasn't fit enough for 90 minutes, then it made sense that change. But I didn't mind the personnel, but maybe I'd have just changed the positions as I've just alluded to. So I'd have probably had Tracy off the left, Rowe off the right, and then Kirk central. But
see, I agree that Rowe and Tracy are both wingers, but I think Kirk absolutely falls into that category as well. So you've got three wingers in two positions. So one of them's got to play as a number 10, and none of them are naturals.
But I think with Kirk, knowing how he's come through the academy and how we've developed him from a technical perspective, I think he's one that can take it on the half turn. I think he's one that could probably find little pockets of space and actually and be more effective in a central role. So that's why I'd have gone there. And I don't know why it wasn't tried. You know, why wouldn't you have just chucked him in there? If it didn't work, you can always change positions during the game.
It's with the benefit of hindsight. But I wonder whether Osterfield might have actually been the best pick because he was the one that was able to take the ball on the half turn. He was the only one really that was able to play in that midfield yesterday. And that means you could have Thomas and Lee as your two kind of more defensive midfielders and move Osterfield a little bit further forward.
I could get on board with that, but I think Osterfield's most effective when he's driving from deep and carrying the ball. If you start him 15, 20 yards further up the pitch in that 10 role, do you lose some of his better qualities? That would be the only counter to that, but I wouldn't be against it. I mean, we bought Lewis Lee in on loan on the 8th of January, I think. He hasn't played a minute. He hasn't started a game yet. So they either don't fancy him or he's just been bought in as a squad player. But I don't think Preston will be rushing to send any players back to us that's how we're going to treat their loanees.
I know we're all desperate to get onto the action at Doncaster, but just to give you another option, could we not have had Courtney Baker-Richardson up top with Nevitt because he is a striker and, you know, playing as a two? Would that not make some sense, Mark, or is that me being clever after the event?
I don't think he's done enough to warrant a start at the moment. And in the last few weeks, I think he's been average at best. He wasn't on his own yesterday in not changing the game when he came on. I don't think any of them did, but, you know, he didn't offer very much, did he? I think it's got to the point now, maybe controversial. People might be shouting and screaming at the device they're listening to this on, but I wouldn't keep him beyond the summer. I think we can find better than him.
Another option, maybe playing Zach Williams as a left centre back, going to a back three and having Thomas and Osterfield as your midfield and playing a 3-4-3. That was one that did cross my mind as an option. So you can have Zach as a left centre half, Ed Turner as your right centre half, Mickey sort of sweeping up behind him. And then Cooney's probably more adept at playing wing back than Billington is. And then Rio, it gives Rio the freedom on the left hand side.
So that was the formation we finished with yesterday, pretty much, wasn't it? The only thing I would say is we didn't half look open at times in that last 15, 20 minutes. Maybe because we haven't played a three for quite a while now, but they looked like they were going to... Well, they tore through us a few times.
Okay, let's get on to the action. This is a question that any of you three are welcome to jump in on. I don't want us to talk about consequences of the season. I don't want us to go into that yet. I just want us to work out what went wrong yesterday.
We were shit.
Well, look, I don't think that performance yesterday was a whole lot different to a number of other performances. There was just a few key moments that went against us. You know, if they don't score from a corner, if Osterfield's shot from close in doesn't get blocked on the line, if Kirk doesn't try and put it in the top corner and, you know, just finishes that move, if Rio takes his chance, you know, I don't think yesterday was an absolute disaster from a performance point of view. And I also think probably Doncaster were probably better than their league position suggests. You know, at the start of the season, they were, you know, expected to finish top 10. And they looked like certainly a mid-table team. They weren't a bottom four team yesterday. So whilst on the back of the Morecambe defeat, that not very good performance and very bad result is awful, I don't think in isolation it was the worst performance of the season by a long shot. If one of the chances goes in and they don't score a free goal, we probably win that game.
I'm not sure I agree. And I know we watched the game together, so I'm not just being an arsehole for the sake of it. I just think that we've set a bar this season, and that performance fell so below it that it surprised me. And I'm just thinking about the fact that we, according to the official stats, we had two shots on target yesterday, and I can only remember one, which was the Rio chance in the second half. I don't think we ever really looked like we were going to score. And that concerns me. I said to you on the way home in the car, it's not the fact that we've lost. I can take a defeat anywhere against anybody. It's the manner in which we lost. And I don't know, I just thought that too many players yesterday were sort of playing 5 and below out of 10. And that's ultimately why we're talking about a 2-0 defeat. I'm not sure why, Stu, to answer the question. But we just didn't look... I don't know what even the right term is. It's hard to level this at this group, but I don't think the work rate and intensity was what it has been. And I'm not sure why. I find it hard to believe that second half last week against Morecambe has been enough to see a massive loss of confidence, because we didn't play that bad last week. I think we got complacent, whereas yesterday... I don't ever felt like we were at it right from the first whistle.
Well, I'd agree with that. I don't think we were fully at it, but I think there's been loads of games exactly like that this season where we haven't, you know, started very well and then we come into it second half, or, you know, we've had a poor 30 minutes and then pulled it back. And as I say, I don't think, if circumstances had been a bit different yesterday, I think we could have easily got a draw or even a win. You know, once you go behind for a goal like that, you're chasing the game, and that alters things. But I also think we really, really struggled to play through their midfield yesterday, and especially in the first half. I thought we were really poor. I actually thought the second half display was all right.
Yeah, I know. One of the reasons, Stu, I suppose, or one of the things that frustrated me so much yesterday, well, there was two things. One was that attempted chip ball over their defence, which they just swallowed up all day. Yeah, I was sick of seeing it. And the amount of times that we would start a move and get to the halfway line and then go backwards and go back to the keeper. I'd love to have seen the stats for Booth's touches in the first half, because he must have touched it more than Nev.
Yeah. I feel like the Morecambe game, it just has that feeling of a sliding doors moment, doesn't it? Like, the season has almost changed. It has that feel to it, you know. 3 more points on the board, you then got some momentum going into the Doncaster game, having won a couple on the trot. And it just feels like it's punctured us slightly, and we've just not got back into our stride yet. I thought we were poor yesterday. I didn't think... I agree with Tim's point. I think if you look at the season as a whole, I could name maybe 3 or 4 games where we've been excellent throughout the 90 minutes. You think Stockport, you think Notts County, you think Derby, you think Barrow. They're the four that immediately spring to mind. Even at Mansfield game, I know we got an early goal and we held on to it, and it was a battling, gritty, determined performance. It wasn't necessarily a brilliant performance across the 90 minutes. So I do get the sentiment where Tim's coming from. Where actually, if you are nil-nil at half an hour, no damage done. And all it basically is just make sure it stays nil at your end, a mistake or a bit of quality at the other end, and you can sneak a 1-0 win, which is what good sides find a way to win. And we've done that throughout the season. We found ways to win. I remember going back to August, September time, where we kept on going 2-0 down and getting points. We found ways to not lose as well, because we had that spirit and determination. But you never felt like we were going to get back in the game. And I mean, if Rio puts that chance in, maybe we're having a different conversation. But even, I mean, that was the final nail in the coffin, wasn't it? As soon as that didn't go in, everyone just deflated. It was like,
I would have backed us to get back in it if he scores that. Just two things. I mean, I was on after that Mansfield game, and one thing that stuck in my head from that podcast ever since was Steve Davis, when he said that he looked out onto the pitch and thought, I can't think of a better group of players I'd want away from home defending a 1-0 lead. And I agreed with that at the time. That's what hurt me the most last week. I didn't think that group had got that in it to throw a 2-0 lead away at home. And apart from that Rio chance yesterday, I never really thought that they looked like they were going to come from behind like they have before. You know, early on in the season, it would have been, all right, okay, 1-0 down, bit of a jousy goal, we'll go again. But it didn't feel like that yesterday. The whole performance just felt flat.
Yet, if Rio sticks that one away, we probably get something out of that game.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
15 minutes to go, and we'd have been all over him there.
Didn't know, did he?
Let's go on to the goal. Alex, I'll come to you. Bizarrely, in the four seasons that we've been doing this properly, this is the second time Crewe have conceded a goal straight from a corner. It is difficult to look past anyone other than Booth for fault with this one.
Yes. Yeah. I don't really know what happened. I mean, there was talk of him being held, but it didn't look like it to me. It just looks like he's got caught underneath it. And it sailed in over his head. There's an argument of, do you have a back post man? I think football as a whole seems to have moved away from that. I'm not buying or selling on it. But yeah, it was just really, really poor.
On the telly back, somebody would have headed that off the line.
I don't think they would. I think if you look where that's hit the post, it's hit the post like right underneath the bar. Unless your man's 6'8", he's not heading that off the line.
Have you seen it back though? Because I thought that on the day, but since I've seen it back, it looks like it could be headed off the line.
No, I'm not convinced.
But the goalkeeper's starting position's all wrong, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Completely agree. He's got to be. But I mean, you know, me and you have played in goal, and it was always you would start two-thirds of the way towards the back post, because as the ball's coming in, it's easier to move towards your front post walking forwards than it is to move towards your back post walking backwards. And the danger, if you start in the middle or nearer your front post, the ball's going to go over your head, and that's exactly what happened. So I don't know, what maybe there's some new analytics in football with goalkeepers that it's, you know, statistically better to start in the middle or nearer your near post, but you're leaving yourself open to, look, it's a freak event, you know, it's not going to happen all the time. But I just think you're leaving yourself, even if it doesn't go in directly, you're leaving yourself open to that back post header if you start too close to your front post.
Is the bigger issue that we've got two goalkeepers that are much of a muchness? I do think that Tom Booth is a better shot stopper. And before that goal, he made a few decent saves, decent stops, although I would expect him to have saved the ones that he did. But have we found ourselves chasing promotion with two goalkeepers that really, you could pick either of them and not, there's not much difference. Do you see what I'm saying?
Just bear in mind that 4 years ago when we got promoted from this league, we had Dave Richards and Will Jaskalainen. So it wasn't like we were endowed with good goalkeepers there. Last year, we were very fortunate that we had a Conquo and Beadle, which was an exception to the goalkeeping norm at Crewe Alexandra, being perfectly frank. This year, all you're looking for your goalkeeper to do is don't cost us points. The side is good enough to win us points. You don't need to do that this year. just don't cost us points. Last year, we had goalkeepers who were winning us points. We don't even need that this year. Let the 10 outfield players do that. Just don't cost us points. And to be fair to Tom Booth, he had demonstrated that he didn't doesn't hasn't cost us points. I mean, there was obviously some question marks around his debut against Barrow this season. But if you then look at all the other fixtures since then, I think he's grown in stature and he's got more comfortable. I think the injury's probably set him back a bit in terms of, you know, puncturing a lung is never nice. But at the same time, it feels like he's got to find his feet back in the side again, having not played for a month. And that showed in at parts yesterday. So I wouldn't be dropping him because I don't think you can go back to Davis anyway. And I just think Tom Booth is less likely to make a mistake, which costs you. Harvey Davis has got a string of them. Booth's got, I mean, there's some question marks around the Barrow one, but even I don't think that was that bad. And then he's obviously got yesterday's against him. Davis, we could pinpoint several errors.
The conversation me and Mark had in the car on the way home was, whilst in principle we would want to stick with our keeper, we said it before this week and we said it again on the way home, our next opponents are Sutton United. Sutton United are set piece demons. They've got a 6 foot six centre forward and they've got two centre halves that are built like brick outhouses. If ever there's a call to bring in your 6 foot five goalkeeper who's decent in the air, then it's on Tuesday, right?
A goalkeeping is not a position. I don't think it's, you don't have goalkeepers or horses for courses selections. It's not like a centre half or a left back that you can swap in and out because of the importance and the specialism around the position. I'd be loath to be bringing in Harvey Davis to play one game because they've got a bunch of giants. If Harvey Davis is coming back in, he's got to stick back in. This changing, it's not good for the back four as well, constantly chopping and changing your goalkeeper. So I get the sentiment, but I wouldn't be doing it.
Just to jump in as well, I don't think Harvey Davis has really excelled at taking balls out of the air for crosses this season. I don't really think he's dominated that.
He hasn't won in off a corner.
Well, you know, that shouldn't be the benchmark, Tim. That should not be the benchmark we're talking about.
No, well, you know, it is something we've seen before. Like, you know, look at the Walsall game where we conceded two from point blank range from set pieces, headers on, you know, on the goal line from corners on Boxing Day.
One of the first goals he let in for Crewe, if not the first, was the Bradford one where he came out too far to punch and got nowhere near it. Can remember? And they recycled it and put it back in. I mean, I do get the point. I think anybody that from Sutton that watched us yesterday, you know, don't be surprised to see the goalkeeper pinned on Tuesday night on every corner.
Yeah, I think Dean Austin's scouting report this week will not be complicated. Get crosses into the box, score goals for Sutton United. Mark, I was expecting a reaction after that goal. I'm still waiting.
Yes, I agree. Again, that was one of the most disappointing things. You know, as I've just said, Steve Davis saying that he wouldn't want a different group of Crewe players on the pitch to defend a 1-0 lead. That's the thought I've had all season. Like, we'll dust ourselves down. We've gone one down. Let's get back into it. But it just never felt like it was going to happen. And for some reason, and it can only be the Morecambe second half, but do you not feel that we looked really edgy at the back yesterday that we haven't seen before? Like, we were frightened to make a mistake. I mean, I know I harp on all the time about psychology, but it really does look like that second half has planted doubt into the minds of some, including Mickey. And all of a sudden, we just looked, I don't know, we were perhaps lashing at things, clearing things a bit quicker.
The word you're looking for, we looked panicked.
Yeah, panicked. And also, not just in defending, but also going forward, there was no patience. We wanted to just clip a ball over the top and get in behind him and get back on level terms within the first 5 minutes after the goal. Whereas actually, we looked the most effective when we got the ball down and tried to work it through the middle or get down the sides, but on the floor. I don't think we ever really got in, did we, with a lifted ball over the top? The best sort of chance that I remember was when Shiloh returned to Shiloh in September, where he just knocked the ball past the fullback and then decided to go out and have a race with him and comfortably beat him and pulled it back to, was it Osterfield? And that his shot was blocked. But all our effective play came on the ground. There just wasn't enough of it.
We were trying to work out what the plan was yesterday, Mark. And I think what we came up with was they've got a 38-39 year old centre half in Richard Wood. If we can turn him and get Nevin behind, then you know the space will start, they'll panic and the space will start opening up. But the ball's in behind, we weren't able to get them in to Nevin from a decent position. We weren't able to work it through the midfield. So we ended up either trying to do it from our fullbacks or our centre half or our goalkeeper. And the longer the half went on, the more frustrating it became to watch, because it just seemed like we were trying to lump it forward and we were just finding Wood's head with every ball in. I think there was one that he missed and Nevitt almost got in, or maybe it was Osterfield that almost got in. But other than that, we were just finding his head with every pass.
If you look at the Rio chance, that came from Osterfield driving through midfield, keeping it on the deck. We knocked a few passes around, then Osterfield picked the ball up and ran at them. That's when we caused havoc. You know, you mentioned the Shiloh knock it and run. It just seemed a bit of a flawed tactic not doing that more often, because no defenders like being run at. It's always been the case with football. It's not something that's changed in the modern world. As soon as a defender's backpedaling, they hate it. So actually drive at them and do it. And you can see from Osterfield, he scared them. And there was one defender that went the wrong way thinking he was going to go to the right. And then it just allowed him to roll Rio into the left. So it was just like they were flapping when we were running at them. We just didn't do enough of it. Like you said, it was let's clip it in behind, let's turn them. But it just wasn't that effective.
It was our, well, for me anyway, he was our man of the match yesterday.
Yeah.
Everything good seemed to go through him and we just seemed to bypass him too much. I mean, I felt really sorry for Nev yesterday. I said it to you, didn't I, Tim? He ran and he ran and he ran and he ran, chasing lost causes, but he never really had anything substantial to run onto or work with. It must have been a long afternoon for him yesterday.
Long afternoon for me as well, Mark. Tim, there's one player that keeps getting mentioned in the intro this week or the comments from people writing in, and he's not playing and he's not going to play again this season. How big of a miss is Luke Offord? Is he the answer to why this team seems to have had this fall off in confidence or form?
Yeah, to a certain extent, I think he probably is. But I don't really see the point in talking about him because he's not going to play again this season and possibly not for us again ever. So as far as I'm concerned, you don't think about him anymore. He's gone and, you know, let's move on with what's available to us. But yeah, look, a really good run after Boxing Day came when we moved Offord into midfield. The one blip against Salford came when he played back in defence after we sold Conor O'Riordan. And then, yeah, we've had two games, the second half against Morecambe and there on Saturday, where I think he'd have been ideal for us. But, you know, he's not here. Let's move on.
Okay. Mark, second half, second goal for Doncaster. It's just so easily avoidable, very simple ball in, and then a man taps it in, probably offside, but it's a poor goal to concede.
Well, everybody in the away end was screaming offside. I mean, Belly, I have to say, Belly's interview was class, and if you've not heard it all, because Radio Stoke didn't play it all, they only played about 3 minutes of it. It's a lot longer on YouTube. He doesn't just pile in on the ref and the officials, and he acknowledges that goal was onside. There's some rule about momentum carrying you off the pitch, which then means you're still active and onside.
Yeah, you can't be offside if a defender's off the pitch because he counts as on the line. So because Cooney's off the pitch, it's impossible for anyone to be offside.
But regardless, Stu, you're absolutely spot on. It's a goal that's more reminiscent of the relegation season or the spell under Alex Morris than this team. It's just a goal, again, that you don't associate conceding with this group. It's more than preventable. And, you know, I have to be honest, really, and say that I said it to you on the way out, didn't I, Tim? If you're in exile and you've gone to Doncaster this weekend to watch your first crew performance of the season, we didn't look anything like a side chasing promotion, not even close. I don't know if Doncaster had a particularly good day or whether we made them look better than they were. But it was just a that goal really summed up the 90 minutes, didn't it? It was just really poor and really avoidable.
I actually thought Doncaster played better at Gresty Road than they did yesterday. I thought before the November game, they looked quite a handy outfit and they caused us problems. Yesterday, we caused ourselves problems rather than them having to be particularly good. So I think that sums up just how bad we were.
It felt a little bit to me like, you know, we've talked in recent weeks, haven't we, about Lee Bell and Ryan Dicker coming up and formulating a plan to win. And I just think they got outplanned yesterday. I think the way that they set up and nullified us beat anything that we were ever capable of doing. They won a tactical battle yesterday, and quite comfortably, to be fair.
I think it's difficult to criticise the management team, considering where we are in the league and the season we're having. But they have got a bit wild and wacky recently, I think unnecessarily at times. I think to the Tranmere game, when Matas Holacek was finishing up playing right wing back, bizarre. Lewis Lee's come on and played right wing at times, like a bit odd. Last week's the subs against Morecambe, I know some were potentially pre-planned. They seemed odd. So I think there's an element of potentially overdoing it. It seems as though every time a sub's brought on, it's like a change of formation has to happen with it. You can sub personnel and keep the same formation. It's not a prerequisite. You need to do both at the same time. And that seems to be what's always happening. Sometimes less is more, and we don't need to overcomplicate things. We've got good players, get good players playing in their right positions, and the results will follow. I get there's times where you do need to plan for specific opposition. So I'm talking when you go to Stockport away and you go to a back three and you have Billington as your right centre half and Rowe at right wing back. That's a formulated plan against a side that's top of the league. I understand that. I've got no qualms with that. I think when you're playing a Morecambe at home, a Doncaster away, I don't necessarily think we need to go with these special game plans. I think we need to just look at what's our best formation to get our best 11 players on the pitch who can then play good football and win the game. And I do wonder whether sometimes we can just be a bit guilty from the management team of overcomplicating things in terms of selections and then substitutions as well.
Yeah, I'm not criticising them. I'm not never going to criticise a management team that have got us up to fifth, you know, and chasing promotion. But, you know, maybe they are beginning to overthink it a little bit in the last two. Just go back to, I hate using cliches like this, but back to basics. But you know what I mean? Basically, everything you just said, Alex. Pick your best team, the players in the positions which are the best. I've got no issue with trying to look how to exploit an opposition, but you don't need to overthink it.
We're in a good position still here. You know, look, we're a bit disappointed because of the last two results. One of them's a freak. I think we probably got what we deserved yesterday. But we're fifth in the league. I think most of us would have taken a top-half finish this year. We just need to get away from this kind of slightly frantic vibe that's going around the team and just get back to basics a little bit. Look, if you look at previous seasons when we've got promoted, we've always lost a significant number of games. You know, 1998, we lost 10. 88, 89, we lost 10. 93, 94, we lost 11. 96, 97, we lost 17 games. 2002, 3, we lost 10. 11, 12, we lost 14 games. So we've lost 9 games this year. Even in 1920, when we went up, we lost 8 games, and that was a shortened season. So promotion is still very much on the cards here. We just need to go back to doing what we do well. And we've got some good players, as Alex had said. So, you know, I think there's a bit of a low vibe around the place at the moment. But, you know, we beat Sutton on Tuesday and we're right back at it.
Do you not think as well, I'm not making excuses. I think I'm looking more at factors than excuses. But, you know, that's a massive ground. There was hardly anybody in it. And the ones that were in it made no noise whatsoever. It was so flat in there yesterday. And the away end was, I would say at best, edgy. Where we've been really good in recent weeks. But of course, we've scored early. Yesterday, I don't know, it just felt edgy. And maybe that transferred onto the pitch. I don't know.
I think it was vice versa. I think a subdued performance led to a subdued crowd. There was nothing really to get the crowd going at any stage. Like you said, the Notts County game, we were ahead after 5 minutes. The Stockport game, we were ahead after 5 minutes or however many minutes it was. When you score within the first 10 minutes, it's something for the crowd to get behind and really get on it. I know there's an onus on the fans actually motivate the players, give them a bit of belief, but it's hard to do in that bowl. I mean, it's I don't know if it's Colchester too bad, but it is one of the worst of the new grounds in terms of out in the sticks. No atmosphere. It's too big for them. It's just horrid.
It is a horrible ground. Yeah, and you, Alex, you are right. You know, I think it was the corner we had in the 30th minute, which was basically the first thing we had to cheer. You know, the fans did start off kind of behind the team, but just the performance kind of sucked the enthusiasm out of the fans.
To go back to Stu's point then, because we haven't actually answered it, what was the reason then? What do you two think? Why were we so off it yesterday? Was it the changes?
You've got to credit the opposition to a certain extent, but I just kind of think, as I was trying to illustrate with those stupid facts about the other promotion seasons, over a 46-game season, you are going to lose games. And losing two in a row, it's not the end of the world. You know, if we win our next three and we're up into the top three again, we look back at that little blip as just a little blip. I don't think you need to kind of examine it to its nth degree and find like a list of reasons that went wrong. Sometimes you just get outplayed. It's going to happen sometimes over a 46-game season. It doesn't mean that you're a bad team.
It's a bad day at the office. You just put it behind you, didn't you? Like, everyone has it. Sometimes, I know it's different as a footballer, it's a dream job, but sometimes you just have those days where you're feeling a bit lethargic. You can't really, you try and get yourself out of it, but you're just stuck in a rut. And it's like, look, just chalk that one off, forget about it, and make sure you're up for it on Tuesday.
I think you're right, Tim. And Alex, I think if we beat Sutton on Tuesday night, no one will probably ever talk about that game at Doncaster again because it was just so poor, it'll be forgotten.
That was going to be my roundup. I asked you all at the start to think about the game and then we talk about the season as a whole. But I think Tim has, you know, made the point there that it doesn't matter in the long run. Hopefully, you know, if we're back in a week's time talking about two defeats to Sutton and MK, it might be a different conversation then, but, you know, we'll go with it. So I think that's probably a good place to put Doncaster to bed for this season. Next, we will turn our attention to those two games coming up this week. But first, back in Cup action, the women's team were at home to Bolton on Sunday.
Matt, 5-0 win into the quarterfinals. How are you feeling?
Really happy, to be fair. Bolton were top draw. I know the scoreline doesn't really reflect that, but if I was their gaffer, I'd be heartbroken with that scoreline. They met us on a really good day. We were brilliant today. But we had to up our game due to the quality they brought. I think we had to ride the storm a little bit the first 15, 20 minutes. They were definitely the better team. But just, you know what I mean, the old cliche in football, scoring at good times, and we scored at some very good times. The first one goes in against the run of play. Then we had a second, and then like the third within a minute or two of the restart meant that there was literally no chance for them to get back into the game.
Yeah, the first 15 was tough, but as you said, we weathered the storm, and it's a credit to the defence again.
Yeah, they were rock solid today. Hands had a couple of, you know, early doors. She made some really good saves, dealt with everything really well. Distribution was good. And that's kind of what we're building. We're building that sort of foundation that even on games when we were great today, but even when we do play and we're not particularly good, we know we're solid, we know we're difficult to beat. We've conceded far less goals than we did last season. And we added what we need up the other end of the pitch today. Some of the football was superb to watch. Young players getting more games, and obviously Kez coming back on was the cherry on the top of the cake.
Halfway through the first half, swap wings, tactical decision, looks like it paid off.
Definitely. I mean, we always do that. We try and sign players that are versatile and play different roles. It allows us to make in-game changes rather than drastic changes. We felt like we were struggling a little bit, just getting the ball down and playing. It was very much, we were panicking on the ball. Maybe Bolton surprised the players. I don't know, they didn't really surprise us, but the players looked a little bit shocked. We changed it round, and quite quickly we saw that Leah was getting a lot of joy on the left-hand side, you know, that the fullback couldn't cope with her, and it was, that was pretty much the story for the rest of the game. They had a number of players that played against Leah during the 90 minutes, but I mean, I feel like she did really well against any of them.
You said about versatility there, five different goal scorers today. You must be happy with getting goals from all over the team.
Definitely, really happy with that. You know what I mean? We know that we haven't got that player that can score 25, 30 goals a season. We don't seem to do that in my time at the club. And that's possibly why we've not scored as many this year. You know, we've not had the amount of goals that Beth Grice would bring us in previous years, or Laura Garner would bring us. You know, we're looking to other avenues and Gibbo's chipped in a lot since she's come into the middle of the park. That's been a real benefit to us. Again, Leah's been class today. So it's pleasing that it was five different goal scorers, but also pleasing that they were all really good goals. There was nothing where in past weeks we've kind of gone, oh, great to score, but it's a bit scrappy, you know. Goals are goals, but they were superb goals today. No keeper saving, a good few of them.
And it's another progression in the cup, obviously in the semi-finals of the Cheshire Cup against Stockport. What would winning some silverware mean to you and this group of players?
It mean everything, really, because the dynamics of women's football at every level's changed. And, you know, historically, before my time at the club, we've been really successful in the county. We've won league cups, we've won leagues. We won three county cups on the bounce, and we were definitely the biggest, most successful club in the Cheshire area. And then dynamics change, and, you know, Stockport have become a massively, massive club for women's football in the Cheshire area, as of Tranmere, Chester are doing really well. So, and then you've got your clubs further down the pyramid that are having a real go at it, your Nantwiches and your Northwiches. So it'd mean a lot for the girls because it's been a while without a trophy. I know we haven't won a trophy in my time at a club. It's not something that, you know, I overly think about or lose any sleep of. But, I mean, it's what we're in the game for, is to develop players and give them moments, give the supporters and the players moments to remember. And trophies, winning moments are key. So we've definitely set our sights on the cup when we knew we had no chance in the league. You know, it's so tough in our league with only the winners getting rewarded, the rest. There's no playoffs, there's nothing. So it was, you know, a couple of months ago we said that we had to really focus on the cup. So, yeah, we're happy with it.
Well done today, mate.
Cheers, you're a charm, mate.
Right, Alex. Tuesday night, the Alex are in home to 24th placed Sutton United. Confident we're going to get the season back on track?
Bizarrely, no. These are the fixtures that worry me. Two banks of four, big physical side, going to be setting up for set pieces, looking to for the barrage. So I'm just nervy. We need an early goal, settle the nerves, make them come out, and then hopefully pick them off. If we do get an early goal within the first sort of 15 minutes or so, I'd fancy us to sort of score two or three and potentially win quite comfortably. But the longer it stays 0-0, the more nervous I'd get.
Mark, this is the game then, according to Alex, that when Steve Davis called for patience a few weeks ago on the podcast, this might be the game or one of the games he's talking about.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, weirdly, I said to Tim yesterday at 2-0 down, I can't decide if a game against Bottom and League is exactly what we need next or the worst thing that we need next. I mean, unfortunately, I think it will take two goals at least to win it, because I think Sutton will score a goal. If we try and chip balls over the top and get the fullbacks chipping those diagonals to try and get the wingers in, then we won't get any success at all. If we get the ball down and play and go through the middle like we did yesterday when we looked effective, then we've got a chance. I think Alex is quite right. Two banks of four, it's going to be difficult. We're going to need to be patient. It is. We're going to have to be patient. It's not going to be easy. In some ways, we probably benefit from playing a team away that was higher. You said this, didn't you, Tim? Higher in the league that was going to come at us so we could try and pick them off. But an early... Alex, again, you're right. An early goal would change everything. Scoring the first 10 minutes, I think we'll be fine.
I don't think you could have two more different fixtures back to back than Sutton United at home and MK Dons away, both in terms of, you know, where it's been played, who you're playing, what the opposition set up like, and you know, where they are in the league. Completely different games. But yeah, I think if you look at Sutton, they recently went away from their long-serving manager, didn't they, and brought that miserable Steve Morrison in. I don't know if anyone's seen his interview with the local reporter where he just like dismisses the questions. But they've lost, other than a win at Notts County aside, where they won 4-3, kind of really, I think it was just after we'd been to Meadow Lane, they've lost a lot of their away games 1-0. And I would snap your hand off for a late 1-0 winner on Tuesday, frankly. So yeah, I agree with Mark. I think we're going to have to be patient. It could be 0-0 at half-time. It could be 0-0 for a long time in the second half. That's okay. I think we just need to knock it around, use the width of the pitch, try and pull them out of position, and then hopefully one will bounce in for us, or someone will pop up with a bit of quality and win it for us.
I think I'd bring Billington back in for Cooney, not because I don't like Cooney, I don't like Cooney, but Billington's taller. And even though what I said about CBR before, it might be a game for him to start just because of his ability to head out the box.
He needs a goal as well. He hasn't scored. Yeah. I can't remember the last time he scored. Would it have been Swindon?
Well, regarding the number 10, I'm not sure it's a game for Holacek. It can work both ways, can't it? If they're going to be all physical, maybe Tabner, but the Tabner's coming back from an injury. So what do you do there?
No, I think you need to get Holacek back in, because if you're going to have two banks of four, you're going to need a bit of guile and quality. I don't think we can pick a side based on the fact that they're going to have a bunch of lumps. I think you can cater for them. So the likes of Billington and CBR are probably two changes I'd make. But I still think you've got to find a way to get Holacek back in that team. He's probably got a bit of quality that can unlock that low block that we're likely to come up against.
I always remember what Dario used to say in games like this, where he'd say, if you're coming up against... I mean, Stockport was the one I always remember when they had Kevin Francis, and who was the other big fellow they had up front? Was it Ricky Otto? And he used to say, we could fill our team with 6 foot six players to try and combat them, but that's not what we're good at. You know, if we try and play their game, they'll beat us anyway, because they're used to playing that way. We've got to try and play our game and be better at them at that aspect. And, you know, I think Alex is right. If we can bring, almost go the other way and try and beat them by having little fellas in the team playing around them, I think that's probably the way to do it. Whilst, you know, as Alex said, maybe get CBR in just for his ability to head out of our box when needed.
To answer your question, Alex, that everyone else ignored, it was Swindon in January, Baker Richardson's last goal. I don't know if you remember, but the game at Sutton was Baker Richardson's screamer that he curled in. I'd love another one of them on Tuesday night to win 1-0. Right, speaking of the scores then, Mark, what's the score going to be Tuesday?
Well, every time I predicted this in the past, we've won this season, so I'm going to go 1-1.
Alex?
I think we just sneak a 1-0 win.
Tim?
1-0.
Okay.
To who, Tim?
1-0 to Crewe, Joss Osterfield.
I spoke to Gabriel to get the Sutton perspective on their season. Hi, Gabriel. Welcome back to the podcast.
Good morning. Good to see you again.
We'll start, if we can, with the 1-1 draw at Sutton earlier in the season. What were your thoughts on the game from the Sutton perspective?
Well, we were on a good run then. We seemed that, as Matt Gray was saying at the time, we are ready to turn a corner and change our fortunes. So it was a good game for us. We felt that we could have had more. Of course, Crewe also probably felt the same, because it was a tight game, in my opinion. But it wasn't a turning the corner that we hoped for. On the contrary, in only a few games, we had Matt Gray sacked, and not even this was good enough for us to turn that corner.
Okay, so you mentioned that Matt Gray was sacked. Do you want to just fill us in with what's happened with Sutton's season since that game?
The sacking came as a surprise. He was positive. He was on a relatively positive run until the 0-8 at Stockport, which was quite a shocker. And many felt that the decision was rushed, but looking at the team afterwards, it felt like it was actually done too late.
After Matt Gray was out, you've obviously had Steve Morrison come in. Has there been a bit of an upturn in the season for Sutton? How confident are you really that you're going to get out of this relegation trouble?
Not confident at all, absolutely. Before having Steve Morrison in, it's been about 3 weeks in which Matt's assistant, Jason Goodliffe, was in charge. He had about 5 or 6 games. He also started well with a win over Wimbledon, our rivals at their home. But he entered again in the drawing spree. And when we had Steve Morrison, it felt nice at the first. Every change brings a bit of enthusiasm back, even in the team. We had 2 very good games with Steve Morrison in charge. We had a 2-2 at home with Barrow, his first game, in which we came back from 0-1 to 2-1 with Harry Beautyman's goals. And then we scored an own goal in the last minutes, in the last quarter of an hour. So we were very close to getting a victory, but we didn't. And then we went at Mansfield, which was in their best form at the moment. And we managed to get away with a draw there. So Steve Morrison brought a lot of optimism. The team was playing different. The team was passing. But the victories didn't come. We had a series of games in which we could have, we felt that we should have won, but it didn't happen against Harrogate, against Walsall, against Doncaster, which was the utmost nightmarish possible ending because we had the ball. There were 5 minutes to go. 4:50 was passed. We had the ball. We had the ball in the defense. We passed it in the midfield to Harry Smith, who was in between 2 opponents, lost it. They threw it in our area, and Buzanis, the keeper, went desperately for some reason at the line of 16 meters and fell over his opponent. So they got a penalty. They drew. From there, they had a winning streak. Obviously, we continued our bad form. So, yeah. Before yesterday, my talk would have been that we feel that we are unlucky. We feel that in many games, we were the better team, not dominant team. Never. We have never in any game been the dominant team, but we have been in numbers, like we had 15 shots, the opponents had 10. We had 5 chances, the opponents had 3. But we drew every time. But yesterday we were so appalling. We had 0 chances. We got a penalty out of nowhere in the last minutes. The penalty was given actually by the assistant referee, not by the referee. Apparent handball. I couldn't catch it even on a slow motion replay. And yesterday we were really, really bad and really, really lucky to draw. But generally, I felt that the team was playing better under Steve Morrison. And personally, though I have some questions, I would like him to continue also into next year.
That was my next question, actually, Gabriel, because obviously Sutton have been in the news recently because of Steve Morrison. And I think that interview with the local reporter, does the feeling that you've just said that you're happy with him, is that the feeling amongst the majority of Sutton fans or people not happy with him?
I wouldn't know to say if it's the majority. A lot of people are happy with him. A lot of people defended him after the interview and consider that the line of question was appalling. There's also a lot of people who are still nostalgic after Matt Gray. So who say we brought him, but he didn't brought any change. We should have stick to our manager. We don't sack managers here. Things like that. Personally, my personal opinion is that Matt Gray was playing football that is no longer up to today. Was playing direct football with high balls. We didn't build anything. And my sensation is that in 3 years from now, even in Isthmian League, they will be ashamed to play like that, with the football changing like this in the last 2-3 years. And Steve Morrison coming here, he was trying to play progressive football. We passed a lot more. But now, this is what puzzles me. Either the team pushed him, saying, we are built for direct football, let's play direct football, or he gave a bit up on his tactics, his ideas, because I see that we are playing more direct now, and we are trying again our old style of game rather than 2 months ago when he started. So this, I tell you, puzzles me.
Okay, Gabriel, I've got one last question and then I'm going to let you go. What's the score going to be Tuesday night in Crewe?
So I had a good forecast last time for you. I guessed the 1-1. Now I'm going to say 1-0 because we are really bad offensively. We didn't find a formula, a starting formula. Every game we changed the starting formula. And I see you winning by a narrow margin.
Gabriel, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Tim, Saturday sees the Alex up against League Two's form team, Milton Keynes. If we turn up like we did on Saturday against Doncaster, then this one is, we've got no chance, have we?
Yeah, I do think this probably favours us a little bit more, just in that we're not expected to get much out of it. And I think, in a weird way, playing against a team that's going to dominate possession probably helps us as well. But yeah, we will have to definitely up our performance levels from Saturday. Otherwise, we could get a hiding. It's one I'm looking forward to. I always like going there. It is a nice ground, although, like Doncaster, it'll be more than half empty again. And it's a nice, easy one to get to from Crewe as well, just straight down the West Coast main line. So hopefully we'll take an absolute load there. If we win on Tuesday, I suspect we will, because it will become an absolutely massive game.
We've got a blueprint, haven't we, for the MK Dons game? Notts County away. I think that's the way to set up. That's probably the way to play. They're obviously going to be more effective than Notts County, and the league table suggests that they are. But in terms of that template, it's probably what you'd want to revert to on Saturday, considering how MK Dons are likely to set up. It'll be a tough game. I mean, since Mike Williamson's come in, no one's picked up more points in the league, I think I read. So they're in serious form. They're a good side. I mean, a couple of seasons ago, they should have got promoted out of League One. The fact that they're in League Two now, tells the tale. So they're clearly a good side and one that we need to be wary of.
Mark, I was going to use the question most, but I might change it based on the last couple of Crewe results. Which game are you least looking forward to this week? The home game against bottom of the league, or the away game at the most informed team in the league?
The home one. The away one, I think. All of a sudden, we've had two results. We've come probably, I say probably, we will have come off the top of the form league table. And I always prefer it when we're the underdog, and I would think we'll be the underdog at the weekend. I went to Mansfield, Stockport, Barrow, Notts County, and everyone I was saying I'd be absolutely over the moon with a point, and I will go the same on Saturday. I think a point would be fine. But I think we're one of those teams that performs well as the underdog. You know, you look at Derby away, for example. Alex has just alluded to Notts County. That is the blueprint. Out of the two, I think I'm probably looking forward to the weekend a little bit more than Tuesday. I think Tuesday's going to be hard work.
Yeah, Tim, I think probably right. You know, and it's, you can go, you know, we're not a team that haven't won since December and staring relegation in the face. You know, we can go there and get a result, can't we?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, we were big underdogs when we went there, and Charlie Kirk scored the winner. That was a cracking day out, by the way. I think it'll be a cracking day. We go into it off a win on Tuesday. We'll be looking upwards again. We should have a big following. And yeah, you're right. We are more than capable with the players we've got in this squad of going to MK Dons and getting a result. It'll be tough. I think they're a good team. We'll have to defend well, but yeah, we absolutely, definitely can get a result there.
All right, Tim, I'll stick with you then. What's the score going to be on Saturday?
I find this quite a tough one to predict. It could. There's quite a wide range of outcomes here.
No, there's only three range of outcomes, mate. Win, loss or draw. That's how it works.
That is quite a wide range. Let's go 1-1.
Alex?
I'm going for an entertaining 2-2.
And Mark?
Whichever way you look at it, it's going to be a six-pointer, isn't it? And I'd much sooner it be a six-pointer that's looking up the table than a six-pointer looking down. You know, potentially we could go... can we go back above them, I think, couldn't we, on Saturday if we win? Unfortunately, I'm going to stick with my previous prediction, I think, and go 1-1, safe. But it could... If we turn up and perform... then it could be the match of the day in that division because, you know, it could be a real humdinger. It wouldn't surprise me to see a 3-2 or a 4-3 one way or the other because I think it should be a game between two good teams.
OK, I spoke to Jonathan to get the Milton Keynes perspective. Hi, Jonathan. Welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me again. I think this is my third or fourth time on here.
Yeah, not a problem. We'll start, if you don't mind, with the 3-1 win for Crewe earlier in the season. MK came top of the league and then obviously Crewe got that win. What were your thoughts on that game?
You fully deserved it. I think we got the early goal from Jonathan Lecco and never really built on it. That was the start of the demise under Graham Alexander after he'd got such a fantastic start to his time at MK Dons. I think he'd been announced manager of the month just before we played you as well. And you just pressed us and we just couldn't handle it. I seem to remember Shiloh Tracy had a good game. I think he came on in the second half and changed the game. So yeah, no complaints from me from the reverse fixture.
Okay, the next question then, I think there's quite a lot for you to try and sum up here because we played quite early on in the season. What has happened since then with you guys?
Well, we went for a real sticky patch. We lost to Barrow and Harrogate back-to-back respectively. We drew with Barrow and lost to Harrogate back-to-back at home. And that seemed to turn the fans against Alexander. There was no coming back from that. We were slipping down the league. I think we were down as low as 16th or 17th. Mike Williamson made Pete Winkleman made a decision to get Mike Williamson, paid a compensation to Gateshead. And since Mike Williamson's taken charge, there's been, I think we're the, we've got the most points in League Two. We're playing football more the way that you expect us to, playing out from the back. Playing with width, playing with pace and energy. And it's just been phenomenal turnaround. And to be where we are as we record, literally on the cusp of automatic promotion like yourselves, you wouldn't have guessed it when Williamson came in.
Okay, next question then, Jonathan, is who should we be looking out for on Saturday from the MK side?
I'd probably say the man in form as we record is Alex Gilby. He's just a bundle of energy, drives the team forward, doesn't let standards drop. He's been the captain since Dean Lewington's been out the side as well. And he's just an all action midfielder. I hope you get to see the goal against Salford because the way he took that goal was just ridiculous. He's got 2 goals and 2 assists in his last 2 games, so he's certainly the man in form. I'd probably say Joe Tomlinson as our left wing back is another one to watch. He's starting to pick up a bit of form. And Matt Dennis. Now, I think Max Steen is just going to miss out on being in the squad for the Crewe game. And Matt Dennis has come in the last 2 games and has given just as much effort and desire as Max Steen has up top. And I have to credit him because he wasn't flavour of the month under Graham Alexander. And over time, he's proved to Mike Williamson that he's willing to fight for every ball and compete and close down and just press from the front. And certainly those three are the ones that I'd probably mention now.
OK, so as we're speaking, following Saturday's results, MK are 4th place, 2 points off automatics. 9 games left for you guys. Are you going to do it?
We've still got to go to Stockport. We've still got playing Mansfield at home, so it's in our hands. I think a lot's going to depend on what other teams do. We're now in a situation where teams around us have got games in hand over us, but I'd rather have the points on the board. I think it'd be a shame if Stockport or Mansfield missed out on the top three, because they've been fairly consistent throughout the season. So I think that third spot with Wrexham and yourselves and probably Barrow is definitely up for grabs. And come the end of the season, I'm sure none of us would mind whether we finish first, second or third, as long as we go up.
Absolutely. That's something I can agree with. Right, last question for you, Jonathan, and then I'll let you go. What is the score going to be on Saturday?
I'd take a point. I'd honestly take a point. The way you guys have played, the away form you've had since the turn of the year, and it isn't just been against the bottom side, it's been against Barrow, it's been against Mansfield and Stockport. And I said to our fan base after today's game against Salford, don't look at Crewe's result today as a, just see it as a one-off, because I don't think there's been too many times where you've gone back-to-back with, from what I've read, quite poor performances. So I can see you coming to us and really giving it a go. I think it'll be a good game of football to watch. And as I say, I'd take the point and move on to the next game, because I think it's going to be two sides that play similar.
Okay, thank you so much for your time.
Not a problem.
Okay, one final thing this week then. I'm going to hand over to you, Tim, for the second week in a row to give us a last man standing update.
Thanks, Stu. We are down to 13 people now. Seven people went out. It was the seven people he picked, either Crewe, Gillingham or Walsall. So down to the last 13. Tense times, chasing the £692.50 pot.
Mark, you were still in it. How'd this week go?
Don't care.
Mark being one of the people that went Gillingham, for anyone not paying attention. I think that will do us for this week. So, Mark, Alex and Tim, thank you so much for jumping on today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you, as ever, for listening. We'll be back to go over the two games next week. Until then, goodbye. Bomb, dang, 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 ding, dong, ding, blue moon.